Breaking news, and this one is almost unbelievable.
Yeah, it's all about new customers at Bet365, because they get $150 in bonus bets when they bet $5, win or lose. And even better, bonus bets can be used on the spread, totals, and player props.
There you have it. Bet $5 to get $150 in bonus bets, win or lose. And see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. T&Cs apply. Available in app only.
Hey, what's going on, Rugby Rant fans? It's the Hammer, and I'm back with another episode, and this one's super special. Well, they all seem super special to me, but this one in particular, I've been working on this one for a bit, trying to secure some great guests, and I have three great guests on board today, and coincidentally, or maybe not so coincidentally, they are all U.S. Eagles in their own right, so I am flying with some absolute superstars, and yes, that is a pun intended. We got three great dudes. So I'll introduce each one of them, let them say their bit, their due, if you will, and then we've got an exciting program lined up for everybody for this evening. We're going to be breaking some down and what is an awesome weekend of rugby and an awesome 3 weeks of rugby. So we're going to be hitting it hard here, but let me introduce all three of our guests, and I'm gonna wait to talk about the guy to my left. This guy over there, last, and there's a very special reason in case you don't know. But first, let's go to the man below, and that is none other than Chango Chance Wangalewski, Eagle number 531, as it says there. He is a prop, played for Rugby ATL, was on loan to Rooney for a bit, and then is going into his third season with the Seattle Seawolves. And he is he's a tattoo artist, does some great artwork, and is available, mind you. And we'll even, spread some mulch, if you will, just to sweeten the pot, I suppose. But nevertheless, Chango, welcome to the show, mate.
Thanks, Rob. Thanks for having me. It's going to be a pleasure. I'm excited.
Hey, my pleasure. My pleasure. And just so you guys know, I'm really pushing Chango and Pongo, honey, to actually do a cartoon, if you will, a new way to promote rugby in the U.S. rugby universe. And coincidentally, Chango can also do the cartoon, drawing work. But then we have another guy, and this is an individual that I really enjoyed getting to know over the last couple of seasons at the Chicago Hounds. None other than Will Maggie, USA Eagle 507, 31 caps to his name. And by the way, a U20 IRB Junior World Trophy winner. So that's a pretty good feather to have in the cap. He played in Europe, Ealing, I believe. Let's see, played in Austin, played in Glendale, but he is now the Hounds director or head of player operations. I think that's still your title, right, Will?
Something like that.
Something like that. But this guy makes things happen at the Chicago Hounds. If it's moving, if there is action happening, at some point, Will is turning the wheel, just like he did on the pitch as a 10. So welcome to the show, Will.
Appreciate it, Rob. Thanks a lot for having me on. And looking forward to breaking down the last few weeks. So
yeah, it's been awesome, hasn't it? And then finally, like I said, folks, I wanted to wait and save Tony Ridnall for the last, and there's a reason for that. First, let me just say, USA Eagle, 168, played in the 87 World Cup, the first ever World Cup, by the way, which is pretty significant. And I'm not sure of all his accomplishments which one he's most proud of, but one of them has to be a graduate of West Point and a member of our armed services. He played with the combined services rugby team, was also a member of the USA Sevens, and played in the 93 Sevens Rugby World Cup. So there aren't a lot of guys who have played in both the 15s and the Sevens code in Rugby World Cup, but Tony is one of them. And then if you haven't noticed, folks, the United States Rugby Hall of Fame inductee in 2005. This just happened several years ago. Tony,
yes, Jack.
Congratulations. Yeah, congratulations.
Thanks.
So welcome to the show, mate. It's great to have you on board. You've been on before, and it's always great to have you on. Oh, and by the way, he is the voice of the Seattle Seawolves at Starfire, too. So Chango has the pleasure of listening to him at least eight games a season. So awesome stuff to have Tony on board. My pleasure. So, you know, just real quick around the horn. We know Tony just inducted the Hall of Fame. But I want to go around the horn real quick. What's happening in your rugby universe? Like, what are you guys doing with rugby right now, or kind of what's on the horizon for you? So I'm going to start first with Chango. Where are things at? You're in Seattle training with some of the boys now, right?
Yep. As of right now, it's off season, so a lot of the guys are going back home. But there's a good select few of us here who are still here in Seattle, and there's plenty of functions that's popping up throughout the upcoming months leading into November. So, yeah, just getting stuck in, getting built into the community, and just trying to continue to spread the rugby word. So just having a good time with it, you know, working on the side a little bit as well. But other than that, we're just on that grind, just continuing to try to spread the gospel. So it's been good.
Good. And I know you guys do it well out there in Seattle. How's Betsy, by the way? Betsy is Chance's dog, Chance and Mariah's dog. A daughter, if you will, fur daughter.
Yeah. She's about to be 9 in September, so, but she's still treats herself like she's a puppy, man. She goes hard on the paint. Yeah,
good. And Will, what's up in your universe? We know that even though the Hounds are in the off season, those guys running the steering the ship, if you will, man in the doghouse, are still at hard at the grind. What's happening with the Chicago Hounds right now?
Yeah, so we're just, twofold, really. We're first and foremost gearing up for the senior academy season, so our full season that coincides with the Midwest Premiership. So we're just putting the final touches on that, which will be really exciting, and our sort of little bit around, you know, particularly how we feel we can help to develop the young US talent in the Midwest and all over the country, and hopefully develop future Eagles. And then secondly is just, you know, retention and recruitment, and trying to build that championship winning team ahead of the MLR next season. So, yeah, we're hard at work with that, with James English and Chris Latham and the rest of the coaching staff. So, yeah, no rest for the staff, unlike Chango with a well-deserved offseason.
Well, it's funny. Will, I got to give you guys props, and I'm not going to mention names. But I was we saw each other at the Midwest Sevens qualifier at the Chicago Blaze, my home club. And I talked to some lads that are still involved in professional rugby, still playing. And one or two of the lads just talked about how well the Chicago team treats its players. And I know Chance talked about how well he's treated out there in Seattle. But I wanted to give you guys props because unsolicited, it came up that you guys do a great job with player personnel, and I can't help but think that you know, you are one of the reasons why.
Appreciate it.
Yeah, no worries. All right, Tony, we know you're inducted to the Hall of Fame. What else is happening in the rugby universe for you?
Well, you know, the whole weekend was pretty much 5 days from Wednesday night when we arrived. We did a function at the UK embassy, to Thursday night, 50-year gala for USA Rugby. Friday night was the Hall of Fame. Saturday were the two rugby games. And Sunday was the XV Foundation fundraising brunch, sending the women's team off to the World Cup, raising a little more money for their bonus pool, which is what they've been tasked with. So I had an opportunity just to talk to rugby people, past, present, and future, and just sort of soak in what the temperature is, you know, in rugby in various areas, whether it's youth and high school, some of the college fights that are going on both national teams, the men and the women, and have come out of that with some pretty strong opinions on, you know, maybe how to grow the game, and also addressing the male-female issue, if we could call it that, and just in terms of prioritization and things like that. And I'd be glad.
Yeah, well, let's don't give it all up now, Tony. Don't give it all up now. Let's save a little meat on the bone for later on.
I had a talk with Bob Watkins, who was one of the founders of USA Rugby in 1975, and has been a godfather of U.S. rugby. And we just discussed me possibly getting back in, you know, and helping Shalom out with the Alumni Association and getting some trying to get some engagement there from, you know, some of the many successful guys that have played and women that have played for this team. Just tapping into that resource alone could be very worthwhile.
100%. 100%. Well, obviously, with the Women's World Cup coming up here in just a few short, you know, like about a month, right? Starts in August.
August 22nd. Yep. August 22nd.
And then
USA versus England in Sunderland. There's going to be 45,000 people there. It's going to be incredible.
That'll set a record. And of course, the men, you know, with the 2027 World Cup on the horizon, we'll talk a little bit about that as we intro our next topic. But, you know, that's on the horizon there in Australia. So, folks, we're going to get into it. We're going to dig into it. Here's our topic. We're going to talk about the three test series involving the United States men's and dip our toe in the water a little bit into the whole weekend down there in Washington, D.C. But we're going to talk about this men's squad because they just completed that three test series and just get a gauge before we head into the PNC for where this team is at. And I want to get the thoughts of three experts, three guys, one who's currently playing, another guy who's currently heavily involved at ops for an MLR team, and a guy, of course, who's involved at the, you know, at the USA level, who is involved with the Seattle Seawolves and has spent his life really in leadership to not just business, but also to this country and the rugby community. So we're going to be breaking it all down. But before we do that, we're going to get into it with a word from our sponsors, Macron, who do a great job not only outfitting USA Rugby, both men's and women's and sevens teams, but also the MLR. All right, so again, folks, what are the takeaways from the U.S. Eagles summer test series? Just so everybody's on the same page, three test matches, in case you weren't following, in case you didn't have a chance to watch. USA versus Belgium, the first week, July 5th at American Legion Memorial in Charlotte, North Carolina. Doubled up on the back of that the following weekend, USA versus Spain, July 12th at the same location in Charlotte, North Carolina. And then the big dog playing England at Audi Field, which is in Washington, D.C. on July 19th. We're going to break those down. But before we do, I just want to say a word. The reason why the Rugby Rant wanted to focus on these three tests is because, you know, based upon last summer, you know, it really set a tone for our performance in the PNC. And I think people came away fairly happy with that performance. Could we have done better? Yes. But overall, I think we had some good performances. We saw growth in the team. And it's particularly poignant this year because the PNC means qualification for 2027 in Australia. And just so everybody knows, basically the United States we basically have to beat either Canada, Japan, or is it Fiji, in order to qualify? We just have to out-qualify Canada is what it comes down to.
Right.
So on the 22nd, we have Canada. That's of August. On the 6th of September, we have Japan. And on the 14th, we have it's to be determined based upon our performance in the first two. But we're going to have a match in Canada in Calgary and a match in California. So we are going to get some matches on home soil, and there are going to be two follow-up matches in Denver and Salt Lake City. So a lot of rugby to be played in the United States. So with that being said, we're going to go around the horn, touch upon each match, break each match down, talk about pretty much anything you want, from player person, player lineups, combos, to what we need to do better, what we did well. We'll throw it around the horn with each one of you guys. And let's start with that first match on the 5th, USA 36, Belgium 17. There it is. Obviously, two guys very happy, Benja, the captain, and Mitch Wilson. So let's break it on down. I'm going to start first with my guy, Chango. What do you got? What are your thoughts on this match? Pick any one or all three of those topics and roll through them.
No, yeah. I mean, first and foremost, I got to give a massive shout out to my guy, Benja Bonasso, man. Like, play with him in New York, obviously play with him with USA. Super awesome to see him in the captain's jersey. No better man for the job than him. So it was really exciting to see him kind of, bring his leadership all together for that and kind of lead the boys to get that victory against Belgium. Obviously, also want to give, another massive shout out to another fellow teammate of mine from Atlanta, Marnu Retallingais. He just brought a lot of X factor, and I think that's kind of the thing that Scott Lawrence is trying to acquire. He wants fit guys, he wants strong guys, but he also wants them to have that power to, like, that leg drive to get through and, clear out those rucks and put on some massive hits in the defensive line as well. So I think Belgium was a great start for these lads, opening up the series. And I think they continued to build momentum. You could see the hands were floating around, even in the front row. Guys are getting those tips on, those offloads off. And it was really exciting to see the boys, bring a new brand of rugby to the USA jersey. So, it was really exciting to see. It was good to see a lot of old teammates playing, new teammates getting their debut and stuff. And it was really cool. Really just a great experience to watch. And I think they're continuing to build on this new momentum, new strategy and ethos that they're putting on.
What do you think they did well, Chango? What'd you come away with feeling real good about?
Yeah, I mean, like, for me personally, like, being in the front row, I'm always looking at the set piece more than anything. And I think that they had a solid set piece, first and foremost. Obviously, some new clientele and the lineouts and stuff as well. So there's always going to be challenges here and there. But I think all in all, the set piece looked really solid, and it gave the backs a good platform to have some good plays.
Yeah, 100%. Did you like the – I mean, they dripped in some new guys into this lineup, some young guys. How do you think those young lads performed?
Oh, I think they did great. I think obviously there's going to be those, like, little bit of jitters, stepping into a national jersey, as there should be. But pressure is privilege at the end of the day, and Scott wouldn't bring those guys in unless he thought otherwise. So I think those guys showed out when it came time. I don't know the young bloke's name from Anthem, but he had a try on his debut. In that game against Belgium, I believe. So it was really cool to just kind of see all those pieces kind of come together. And, it's just like you got to take the opportunity when it comes. Everyone has their time. Some get their first cap, when they're 30. Some get it when they're 18, 19, 21, So it doesn't really matter. At the end of the day, it just comes down to whether they step up. And I think the boys did that day.
Yeah, you mentioned it for me and Marno with that physicality that he brought right from the get-go. I mean, he had that first, I think it was initial run-up, and just made really hard contact and set a tone for the match, which I think was necessary and needed to start off this tour. So let's go around the horn then to Will. Your thoughts on this match? I know you had a more than a few.
Yeah, I think it was ultimately a good result, right? It's a good win against a team that 22nd in the world we should expect to beat. Difficult first up game when the guys don't have a lot of time together in camp beforehand, coming off the back of an MLR season and players joining camp in like drips and drabs a little bit. So, first and foremost, always good to get a win. Like Chauncey there, shout out Benny Bonasso, like starting his Eagles career as captain there is fantastic. I thought he actually did a great job. Some really good performances across the whole series. And then again, another shout out to Nate Augsburger, obviously Ham, 50th cap, like unbelievable achievement. Only a handful of guys have
what
done
a guy.
The Absolutely.
Eagles.
What and, a guy. As a former teammate of Nate's and obviously, working with him at the Hounds now, he has earned everything that he's got. Like, there are guys that have all the talent in the world. There are guys that have the physical stature. Nate, you know, you've seen it on home videos when he was 8, 9 years old up in Minnesota, just playing for the love of the game and always working on his craft. And yeah, just can't say enough good things about him. And the other guy that I think was actually really impressive in that first game was Tonga Kofi from Utah, the tight head prop. Like, man, hats off to Utah there for plucking him out. And he comes in as a true sort of tight head build and strength that we see from his football background. And just someone that you can like build that. I'm not going to talk too much about it, Chance, because obviously that's your area of expertise and Tony is a forward. But like, if a fly half can see that he's doing well in the scrum, I think he must be doing something.
Absolutely.
And then just on the game, like, I agree, Chance. I think it was cool to see the Eagles play a different style, like a new style potentially of rugby. It was very evident that they were playing this wide-to-wide game, particularly in attack. I would just question that. There were a couple of instances in that game where maybe it's new structure, maybe it's new philosophy, whatever it was, where we were throwing the ball about and we were looking for the space. We maybe perhaps didn't have the personnel in the right place and time to execute it to the best of our ability. At least we were trying something and at least we're trying to play. But I did come away from that, you know, a little bit apprehensive, was like, if we're this loose against the Spain or if we're this loose against an England, like, you know, we could be in a bit of trouble here. And yeah, it kind of ended up being the case. Not saying that that was a foreshadow of it all, but it was just, it's difficult to put new processes, new plays in such a short span of time. And I, you know, I admire the you know, the thought process and the putting it into practice straight away. But I think if we're analytical on that performance, there's, you know, there were areas that we could have been better.
So Chango, let's go back to you real quick before, you know, we kind of throw it around. Front row, how do you think the set piece went overall, both in the, you know, in the scrum and in the lineup against Belgium?
Yeah, like I said, I like to believe that they honestly did a real good job. I don't think that there was maybe one or two penalties that went against us, maybe for some cheeky stuff. But all in all, I didn't see like a massive go forward by any means at any point in particularly, but it was a solid platform. And, you know, when you're playing international footy, you have to have just clean ball at the end of the day. And I think that's exactly what the boys delivered on the day against Belgium. I think the lineouts as well. The mall was on a couple of times, and, you know, obviously you want to draw those penalties, and sometimes they pop up and sometimes they don't, you know, it just kind of depends on what the defense is doing, you know, but for the most part, it seemed like it was pretty clean. And obviously I'm probably being a bit biased. I'm not super focused on the bad things, but a lot of the good things that I think, especially with the new clientele with lads, you know, you want to obviously see what they have, and they obviously need to show and try to prove to themselves and to the rest of the lads that they're there to stay and play.
And Will, I'm curious because, like Chance, I was a forward, so I didn't spend too much time, you know, drilling the ball off my foot. But how do you think their kicking game was for a first entry coming into this test series?
Yeah, on the whole, I think it was good in that first game against Belgium. I think when you've got the likes of Ruben de Haas and AJ McGinty there, you know, world-class kickers, like they are world-class in that respect. So it's always going to be a strength of ours in that regard. I think, you know, potentially it's something that we need to get better at across the board, though. Like, you can't just rely in the international game, you just can't just rely on 9 on 10 to kick the ball. And that was something we saw later on with the inclusion of Pittman at 12 in the second and third games as an additional option. You know, but it's something that it's so important from 12 out to 15 as well, that we're not just rely or 11, you know, out that we're not just reliant on two world-class kickers, but it has to be part of your arsenal if you're an international back. So, but on the whole, I think our kicking game was strong. I just think we potentially underutilized it against Belgium in a game where if we had probably just gone, we're going to just overpower you, it's probably a bit of a more comprehensive victory, but it's a great win, 20-point win in any test match. You're going to take that every day of the week. So,
yeah. Was it 14-0 at half, or it was relatively close, I think, if I'm not mistaken. I had it written down someplace, but it was making my rear end pucker just a little bit at how close it was. I would have expected to be a little bit more disparity between the two teams. But I did, before I go away from Will, one question for you. You mentioned Ruben DeHaas. Again, I'm a forward, so you know, guys like Ruben were behind me looking at my rear end and picking balls up, and I wasn't paying too much attention to what they were doing when that ball was coming out. But has Ruben developed his game under Scott Lawrence? I mean, have we seen, or at least have we seen his role change a little bit away from what was that, is that traditional South African, let's kick it up there, give it a chase, work for territory? Have we seen his game change and develop under Scott?
Yeah, I think so. And I think, honestly, for the better, and he's more multifaceted now, potentially. I think the other thing we have to remember with Ruben is, like, I think he's earned his 40th cap and he's like 24 years old or something. Like, he's been around forever. And he burst onto the scene. He's been so consistent for so long. Basically taking over that 9 jersey after Sean Davies. And he's just such a fantastic player, and rightly so. We hold him to a high standard because of his pedigree, because he's come through the Cheetahs in South Africa. He's had spent 2 years with Saracens in the Premiership. Like, we should hold our players that are our leaders on and off the field to a high standard. And they ultimately what are driving us to be a better team. So I think he was one of a few players that really showed how good he is over the course of these three games.
Yeah, absolutely.
He could just be our first 75th capper. Does Todd have 76? But he could come number one. I think he has that kind of potential with as young as he is. Tony, I got to ask you this question. You know, here we have these three games. The Belgium game, the right game at the right time in this test series for the United States?
Oh, well, absolutely. I think I can't speak as specifically to the tactics and the players and selections like Chance and Will, but I could speak at a little more macro level. You know, in terms of analyzing the game and our team, it really depends on, you know, what from the perspective of what we feel our aspiration should be. Like, are we aspiring to be a tier one team? Are we aspiring to be a leading tier two team? Are we aspiring to be a leading tier three team? Because we beat a tier three team, you know, and we're probably considered a tier three team as well. And so, you know, for me, I'm going to hold us to a little higher standard because I have a really strong feeling about having higher aspirations for our teams. And I know we got to crawl before we walk, before we run, but you know, we should smack a team like Belgium, you know, and it should be more than 19 points. And you know, we kind of failed to do that. And in general, if we're going to, you know, I think our ability to be clinical is going to be the difference, right? We had an opportunity. I don't mean to fast forward, but in the England game, you know, we had an opportunity minutes in with a 5-meter line out. We kicked, you know, we didn't think about taking the points. So it was no discussion with the captain and his teammates. They went to take the line out and they did not win that line out. And, you know, their 5 points goes begging right there. So we could have, just being more clinical in general and holding us to a higher standard. So when people say, you know, certain people have great, you know, analysts say certain people have great games or whatever, they might look at the open field stuff, but it's the small things, the small margins where it's not necessarily happening for us.
So do we, in your mind, need to elevate our standard? Do we need to get, perhaps, you know, not do a Belgium game, but perhaps a game like, oh, I don't know, Georgia, or, you know, a game,
a team that's right on the cusp. If you're looking at this,
okay.
If you're looking at this as a series, and this was the perfect opportunity to look at a building block series, right?
Okay.
C level, B level, A level, you know, or C, high C, and A level, you know, with Spain and England. So I wouldn't want to play Georgia. I mean, they looked like absolute beasts in the first 10 minutes against the Springboks. My gosh.
So if I hear you right, what you're really saying is it wasn't necessarily it was the right team to play at the right time, but
sure,
because we weren't clinical enough, we didn't execute enough, we should have smacked them a bit more in the mouth and come away with a little bigger,
it's like a bigger result. Like the teams Ohio State and Georgia play in September, right? You know, they should beat those teams by 70 or 80 points. I'm not saying we should win by that margin, but we should win much more convincingly, not only on the scoreboard, but in the run of play than we did against Belgium. That's just my personal, you know, my personal feeling.
So I gotta ask a question here, gents, and you can just go around the horn and respond if you will. Not very well attended. You know, might that have been because it was the first game of the test series? I tend to think it was because it was July 4th weekend. And, you know, as Americans do, we tend to get out of town on July 4th weekend. Will probably knows this more than anybody from being in Chicago. We go up to either Michigan or we go to Wisconsin or even Indiana. I don't know that we can do anything about this. So how do we meet this challenge? How do we overcome this and make a game like this a better draw? What are we going to do? What's the answer? Or isn't there one?
Can I jump in here, Rob? I will jump in here.
By all means.
I'm extremely disappointed in the way we program our games and where we put them and things like that. I'm not going to speak specifically to North Carolina because that particular event site is managed by rugby people and owned by rugby people, I believe. But I'm of the opinion we need to create sort of a place that's U.S. rugby, you know, where we can create a community, and we can create. It's got to be, you know, central location, whatever. This gets back to real estate, you know. But a central location where we can have things and have academies and we can have games and that's where the office is, you know, so we're not having to pay someone else for our office. We're able to get all the receipts for all the games, you know, from parking and concessions and just all that stuff that we just don't get financially, and also from an attendance standpoint. So it would be my want to put these games on a regular basis so that each year we're continuing to build community and you don't have all these first time expenses, you know, the $25,000 to build the signs and to do this, just whip them out the next year when you know you're going to have a game at your location, and to try and build on that and have some focus and create a 5-year plan for, you know, starting out with 2,000, 3,000 people in the stands. 5-year plan to get 10 to 15,000 in the stands. 5 years from now, you get 15,000 people in the stands. It's a whole different ballgame financially and everything.
So, Will, you come from, you know, you're obviously from England. You know, England has Twickenham. It's the home of English rugby. And that seems to be what Tony's suggesting. What are your thoughts on that?
Yeah, I agree. I definitely agree there needs to be a central location where we can call home. I think the unique nature about rugby in the US, though, is the geographical landscape. And I think if done correctly, we might have to have sort of three homes. We might
absolutely, 100%.
Hubs, homes, scaled venues, etc. I think while we're on the topic of it, and I know when we're kind of going away from the 4th of July weekend aspect, but kind of along this route is two of the three games had significant weather issues, right? And we cannot control the weather. We cannot control force majeure, blah, blah, blah. But we can make smart decisions to locate these games in rugby hubs that may have a more favorable climate, not only just to avoid operational issues that they've encountered in two of the three games, but also for the brand of rugby and the entertainment factor, because we're playing in conditions that are unbelievably difficult to play in. And it's hard to necessarily see that on the TV screen unless you've lived and done it. But when you're playing in, you know, the Carolinas or DC in July and it's 85, 90, 9500 degrees and 85% humidity, you cannot play the rugby you want to play. It turns into a kicking game, which, you know, as a kid that grew up in England, I love it. But as someone who now wants to watch the game and be entertained, it's not the spectacle that's going to allow us to entice new fans to say, wow, this is an awesome sport that I want to play. And I just feel that, again,
or watch.
Exactly. Arguably, you know, just as important, right? So I'd argue we have locations in July that we could play rugby in that are rugby hubs, Denver, Salt Lake City, at altitude, that is going to make it just as difficult for the oppositions who aren't used to it as the in the hot conditions. But having that altitude, having that dry ball is a game changer, and it allows you to play rugby. And I just think,
great point, Will.
Think again on Tony's point about this is a holistic 360 thing. We've got to start thinking about, and we've got to get this right as we lead into to 2031.
Yeah, 100%. As we start to think about venues and places, not only that have, you know, both smaller facilities for tier two matchups, but also bigger facilities can hold tier one matchups. There also is the consideration of when that World Cup will be played in our calendar to maximize attendance and maximize success of the game. Chance, you're a forward. We traditionally prefer not to run as much as, you know, unless we have the ball and we're going to bang somebody around a little bit. But you played in those difficult wet conditions up in Seattle. You played in ridiculously hot and humid conditions down there in St. Louis. Where's that ideal venue at? Where would you played all over. Where would you like to play? Where should that hub, at least one of those hubs, be?
I should have known this question was coming. Ah, man, we'll just bring it right back to the homeland for me. Just put a right plop in the middle of Oklahoma. No. I do agree with Will on this. Like, I think having three locations, honestly, the U.S. is just so big. All my foreign friends are like me. Like, you go to one state, it's going to be completely different than the next. Like, you have to kind of, like, prep them on the way to the game when you jump on a flight. Hey, man, like, we're about to get in some crazy humidity here, or, like, yeah, like it's going to be raining during the game. Get prepared for it. It's mental preparation at the end of the day, you know, for a lot of these lads. But as far as just having like a central location goes to, you know, put USA and have it like our own personal headquarters, man, it comes down to, like Will said, I think probably Denver like was a great spot. That was a great hub for a long time, for a long period.
I don't think we took anywhere near the advantage of it as we could have and should have, quite frankly.
That place
should have been standing room only for the last 10 years.
From what I understand, I don't know that it, I think it was more about the management and the inability for USA Rugby to make, and I'm not going to place blame on either side. It just was their inability to work together cooperatively to make it work. Absolutely. I think that was one of the biggest issues. Of course, I'm pretty sure Will knows of a place in Indiana that he would like to see that location at, right? We won't get much into that.
Indianapolis, perhaps. I mean,
sorry, Will. I just thought I'd plug that one in there. Let's move on to Spain a little bit. This one, you know, Spain 31, United States 20. I'll start with Tony. When you saw this on the calendar, was this a game you expected the United States to win, or what did you expect out of this one?
Well, no, I mean, you'll never hear, unless we're playing, you know, one of the traditional IRB countries, and Argentina, and now throw Japan in there and maybe Fiji. I'm expecting our team to win. And, my Eagle number starts with a one. Now that I think they're at seven or eight, so it kind of dates me a little bit. But that's my expectation. That's my expectation, man.
I mean, so does your use of IRB, mate.
World Rugby. I'm expecting to beat Spain. I mean, there's just no question about it. And if we don't, there are not many positives that really can come out of that. I mean, you could sugarcoat it, you know, if you want, you can sugarcoat it. But we need to be smacking these teams around before the World Cup in 2027. No, there's just no question. So I consider a loss like that a real disappointment, you know, a real disappointment, particularly if you're looking at like this as a, at a test series where we're talking about the sequencing of the games, Belgium, Spain, you know, whack Belgium, come into Spain, and then whack Belgium, beat Spain, and then come into England with some confidence. You know, if we come into that game with some confidence, maybe we score on that first try, first line out in the first few minutes against England. And it's a whole different story. But, you know, you get knocked off the block a little bit when you lose a game like Spain. And then you've got England coming up. That's a whole different mindset. Correct me if I'm wrong, Chance or Will, but it's a whole different mindset from a confidence standpoint, in my opinion.
What were your expectations, Will?
Yeah, I mean, we beat Spain in November the year before, right, away. So, like, that's a tough place to go and win, hostile environment. We've won that game. Like, we should be expecting to beat the teams that are around us in the world rankings, like Tony's mentioned.
Absolutely.
Like, there's just, especially on home soil, and if we don't, then there's something categorical. And I believe from an outsider now, I'm sure the guys and staff have that same mindset. We should absolutely be beating the teams like Spain and around that sort of level. I'd say to dive into that game, like, it was just a disaster. Was it minute three, really, or whenever
they
dug ourselves a massive hole, you know, 30 minutes really under pressure from Spain. And don't get me wrong, Spain are a good team. Like, they compete in Rugby Europe. They're a good side. A lot of their guys play Pro D2, top
absolutely
four. They're a good team. But we're a good team too, and we have amazing players and athletes in the US and overseas too. So, yeah, really tough 30 minutes. I then thought, fair play, really good 10 minutes before halftime to dig ourselves a little bit out of that and a strong 10 minutes after halftime. But then I was just, again, just disappointed the way that game finished. We got ourselves right back into it to really get it over the line and get a really good come behind win and take some confidence into the week after. And Chance, you can probably go into it in more detail than I can, but I just, the set piece just massively let us down in that second half against Spain. And if you don't have the ability to capitalize on, you know, if we win a penalty and we kick 30, 40 meters down the field, and then you don't have the ability to retain the possession, you know, like, you might as well just tap and go and play from your own half and guarantee you're going to have the ball for a few phases. So it's put ourselves in a difficult situation right from the start. And then that second half was just disappointing. We couldn't quite pull it back. So it was a very, I'm sure internally as well, I'm sure they're extremely frustrated with the narrative and how that game ended up.
Breaking news coming in from Bet365, and it's no surprise. Same game parlay from Bet365 just keeps getting better.
Well, it's even easier to make a bet. Choose from the most popular markets like hits, run line, totals, and home runs. So many to choose from.
Download the app, start building your bet, and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply.
Well, Will, you kind of mentioned it, and I was going to touch upon this. One of my frustrations and things that they need to work on in terms of execution and their ability to convert inside the five, two opportunities to do so, and they failed to convert.
Clinical.
Chance, down by 17 at half, you got to work your way out of that. From a front row standpoint, from a line out standpoint, how hard is that mentally to come back in that situation and start to put points on the board and turn that scoreboard around and change that momentum?
Yeah, you just have to just kind of drop it and just move on to the next one. Like you said, like the first 3 minutes, the first 30 minutes, really, it was just tough to like kind of watch. Just a lot of silly errors, set piece errors as well, like just leaning too early in the scrum. Boring and just like silly things that just don't need to happen, like things that we can truly control on an individual basis. We just weren't helping ourselves in those first 30. There was, like I said, like in that second half, I did see and feel the momentum change, and you could see like that we were getting back into it. And then it was only a 1-point game for what seemed like maybe 10, 15 minutes. And obviously, in the end, you do need to finish on top, and we just couldn't get the job done. But yeah, like you said, set pieces are extremely important, man. Like, if you're having these tiny little errors, the ball's not caught, being brought down after a line out, and it's not getting to the nine, like, you're not going to be able to play with the ball. And I think maybe some of those little tiny errors that Maggie was talking about in that first game against Belgium, you know, playing as loose as maybe against Belgium, you as much as you want to bring that confidence into playing Spain, you do need to tighten the screws up, because I think in the rankings at the moment, they were 16, we were 15. They had a little fire on their belly in the sense that we're gonna take that one step forward. And I think just on the day, we just didn't show what we can be good at, what we know, what we can achieve. So, yeah, they're very disappointing, you know, like Tony said. And I think that at the end of the day, like, you need to take the lessons from that and really know that you got the next big step ahead of you, which is England. So, yeah, it was a tough one to watch. You know, I really hope that the boys could have won that one. I knew that they had the capabilities and the firepower to do so. And it was definitely just a bit of a shame to see that not happen.
So I want to ask Will again, as a skill guy, not that being a prop isn't a skill. It's a skill for sure, but it's a different type of skill. Will, what I really felt like is that Spain did a better job in the kicking game throughout that contest than we did. And then they used it not only offensively, but they withstood our kicking games defensively. They would start our kicking games pressure, and they used their kicking game to create pressure. And Chance talked about the momentum shift, right? When it was like, I think 2021, we were really in the game. We were pumping. It looked like we could come back. And all of a sudden, you know, they start using that kick game, and we made some errors with that clinical, our lack of ability to be clinical, as Tony mentioned, failed us. And they really used that kick game to put pressure on us. Talk about the back three. Was this the right combo at the back for you?
That was a big question.
You want me to put it on pause and think about that?
No. I think. Look, I'm not gonna name directly and bag. I think, like, ultimately, like, the answer to that question, in my view, was deemed in the selection for the game the week after. So it's as simple as that, right? If the performance isn't good enough on the field, you know, Scott and the coaching staff are going to make changes, and you're going to make changes when you go up against England, who kick more than most teams in good conditions, and they're going to kick even more in difficult, humid conditions. So, look, they made some alterations during the game. It wasn't just the fact that Spain kicked well to relieve pressure, like you mentioned. They kicked really well to put us under pressure. Their first try was an attacking kick in the corner, right? So, like, you're using this skill, a clear game plan to target the back three potentially, and utilize that both to, like I mentioned before, relieve pressure and add pressure on. And that's ultimately the hallmark of a good kicking game. We struggled. Like, there's no beating around it. Like, we really struggled to deal with the aerial threat, you know, that then led to them reclaiming that sort of, you know, second ball, as you were, or diving on that loose ball. And they created more contest for possession, coupled with the fact that when we had the right to have possession through the scrum and line out, we didn't necessarily always maintain that. I'm not privy to, but I would love to have seen the sort of stat report card on error count and turnovers and all of those sort of things, because I think you see that Spain really controlled that and controlled that kicking game, and ultimately that's what led to them winning that game. Because, like Chango mentioned, we got it back to 21-20. It was in our grasp, and we just couldn't quite get it over the line. So I think it's something that the coaches would have looked at. They made some changes, and obviously we'll go on to the England game, but I think they dealt with the threat a little bit better in the third game, so potentially a step in the right direction there.
I got to ask, so Tony and Chango, you guys know Foodie real well, obviously, being a member of the Seattle Seawolves. He brought a real spark and energy into the game when he came on. Should he have come on sooner? Should maybe he've gotten the start just to see if they could use his running ability, attacking ability to get on top of this game? Or is he, you know, I again, showing my ignorance as a, because I was never a member of the back three, or is, you know, did we need other personnel to prepare for that aerial assault?
I'm going to leave it up to the boys that are currently involved on the field.
I know. I mean, I know I talked a lot there, and if this is an area that I know a little bit more about than Chance, then that's fine. Look, all of these attributes are part of your skill set. So like if you're a back three player, whether you're 5'7" or 6'5", like that's something that you need to be able to, you know, convincingly do. Right. It's no secret that box kicking is such a massive part of the game in world rugby these days and how important kicking is. So like we talked earlier about, like, it's not just 9 and 10 who kicks now. Everyone needs to be able to kick. Everyone needs to be able to deal with a high ball if you're a back. So like whether Ina could have come in and done a better job, there were other guys that weren't involved that could have potentially done. They all need to be at a level where they can field a high ball, you know, contest in the air, and then also be able to do that back onto Spain or whichever team we're playing. So I think it's just a big skill. Kick receipt is a skill that we need to continually work on in the US massively.
Absolutely. Yeah, for sure. For sure. So let's turn our attention towards the England game. And I'm going to start with Chango, because one of the things that my concerns going into this game were in the set piece. My biggest concern was a team like England, they know how to scrummage well. They are very tactically smart in the line out. They have developed players in the Prem that are strong and physical in that scrum. And I really thought we were going to get the screws put to us. But in my assessment, I came away feeling like, I mean, were we great? No, but I thought we measured up fairly well given who we were playing. You know, I think in the first half we won two or three penalties on scrums. So what were your thoughts on the set piece against that in that England match? By the way, fans at Audi Field, like I mentioned, 40-5 in favor of the Red Roses.
No, yeah, I think the boys learned their lessons from that Spain game. Honestly, I think that like you said, they got two penalty advantages, but I also think they gave two penalties as well, just, you know, due to sometimes, like you said, that connection and maybe the different clientele, whatever. It doesn't really matter. But at the end of the day, yeah, like you said, the boys stepped up for the game when it came to set piece, and I think that's something to hang their hats on. Like when it comes to scrum, like you want to be able to, you know, battle tier one teams and be able to get the platform that, you know, your boys deserve at the end of the day. Massive shout out to my boy Caleb Geiger. I hope he's been playing tight head all year for the Free Jacks.
What a story.
To see him come and just play hooker like he did yesterday, like he did in New York, knowing that he's been training tight head. He looks flawless. He looked great. He was throwing great lineouts. Balls were hitting boys in the hands. And he just looked like a true professional out there, knew exactly what he was doing, didn't miss a step. And I think that kind of trickled into the scrum and set piece as well. And that gave the boys, you know, a good platform, you know, for USA to attack. And yeah, I was just, more than anything, I'm proud of my guy, Caleb. He did awesome. And he, like Tony said, he's got a story. He's like founding a bar in Colorado and just started playing footy like 3 years ago. So it's like, amazing. You got guys like this who are like, that's what like America's about. So you find these guys and you just build on them and build on them. And next thing you know, they're representing, you know, USA playing against England. But no, like back to the set piece, I think it was good. I think it was solid. And I think they were able to, you know, kind of neutralize England's, you know, possibilities of being great that day. Cause I think they were very much, you know, in the same ballpark as us. So, yeah.
I was going to ask Chango this, but maybe since it's his boy, he and Caleb played together, and I don't want to put Chango under pressure. So I'm going to ask the guy that is used to looking at teams, selecting players, even looking at player CVs, player backgrounds, player tape, and figuring out who's going to fit. Will, I got to ask you this. For a guy that Caleb Geiger has not played a lot of rugby compared to some other boys that have come through the ranks, should he be specializing on one or the other, prop, or Hooker. And I know there's value to having a guy who can do both. I get that, right? The Hounds know all too well that sometimes you might need a guy who can play prop and hooker if there's an injury. Wink, wink, nudge, nudge. In that, was it that the Houston game or was it the
DC game?
But would you specialize him given the relative inexperience that he's had in the game of rugby?
Yeah, I mean, his story is incredible, right? Like, and the ability to have played pretty much solely tight head for the last 2 years and then to be playing hooker at an international game, let alone against England, is a phenomenal achievement for Caleb. I think with the... I'm no expert in the front row, but from what everyone tells you, the differences between tight head, loose head, and hooker are massive in the scrum. The yep. skill needed to play to throw and throw consistently to the middle and back of the line out when you're under pressure is a whole nother skill in itself. So I'm not one to say that I think he needs to focus on one or the other. What he's done is fantastic. He's, but you know, I don't know Caleb that well, but from, you know, from what Chance is saying and guys that I know who speak for him, the character of him is top notch. So I think what he's done is incredible. I think, again, to Tony's point, we have high expectations with this team, and ultimately then if you have high expectations of the team, you've got to have high expectations of all the individuals that play for that team. So this isn't about Caleb, this isn't about Jack Ascara, this isn't about anyone, but we need to have higher expectations that we go out there and we nail our job every single time. And if we fall short on that, we fall short on that. But like the absolutely. Expectations need to be
absolutely 100%.
What we are competing. So
100%.
Yeah.
What and before I get to Tony, Will, what were your expectations of this game? Did we meet them? Did we fall short? Did we exceed them? What are your thoughts?
I think ultimately, if you just take the score line, right, and to Tony's point earlier, like we're playing against a good, very good, very good, very good country, albeit without some of their top players, but it's still a top country. I think you take 40 to 5, I believe it was in the end.
Yeah.
Again, I look at the performance more so than the result. The game was really difficult to watch. I think England would have probably been disappointed with ultimately how they played. I don't think they were at the level they were against Argentina the two previous weeks for one reason or another. I came away from that game just a little bit disappointed, if I'm honest. I don't think we fired a shot until the 79th minute. I think we had opportunities. We could have been more clinical when we had some of those early opportunities in the 22. Both teams kicked the ball incredible amounts. I just would have liked us to just try. And again, it's so easy for me to sit here and say this armchair.
Yeah.
It is incredibly easy for me to say that the conditions, I'm sure, were absolutely horrendous in terms of humidity, the lightning that affected it, the storms that came through, all of that. You don't get the chance to play against teams like England every day. Like you do the Belgians, you do the Chiles, you do the Romanias, like, go out there and give it something, try something. And I love that for Poido and Shiloh at the end there, that they did a little front peel, something a bit different. They tried something, you know, they fired a shot and we got rewarded for it. And it was fantastic. It was almost like the analogy I'd use is you've just shot like a 95 in golf and then you make a birdie on the 18th and you want to more. It genuinely felt a little bit like that.
That's a good analogy, man.
It felt a little bit like that. So it was just like, again, Can't fault the effort. The boys gave 110%, difficult conditions, laying their bodies on the line, some big, big collisions, some big shots, a tight five, really, you know, threw it about. I would have just liked to seen us like have a little go. Now before I get last chance, I might have to speak on this England game specifically. I do think that what we've learned from that game is that without AJ, right, we've got a backup there in Chris Hilsenbeck. I'm biased, I've got my Hounds hat on figuratively and literally, but you know, he is someone with that maturing presence that's played a lot of top class rugby, that was under a lot of heat, gave away that early yellow card, but he did never look
covered.
He never looked flustered. Yeah. He showed, I think, that he can control that game. And if needed, in AJ, you know, he's getting older and he does far too much in terms of ball carry and tackle and whatnot when he plays for the US, because he just cares about it so much. But I think that's truly one of the big positives that Scott and the coaching staff will take away, that Chris can be that guy that, if required, when Adj isn't there, that he can steer that ship in the right direction. So,
I appreciate that. And that was one of my questions is, you know, I've always been wondering who's going to be that successor to AJ. Now, Chris himself, I think, is what, 29, Will?
Oh, no. Chris is 33.
Okay.
Oh, so he's probably not the successor long term, like
right.
But
right.
27, you know, like I think.
Yeah. And that was kind of my question, is when we're going to see that successor come through. That's my biggest concern about this series. I would have liked to have seen a young guy work in there at some point that might be that answer, maybe not in 2027, but somebody that we might lean on in potentially 2031. I'm going to ask Tony this, because Tony played a lot of back row, and I'm going to throw this at you. And I know we got your thoughts on the game, but it was interesting because Will mentioned Poitevin came in. And at one point, being back rower myself, I'm looking at that combination. It was Benja, Poitevin, and it was
Makin Alakon.
Yes, it was Alakon, right? And essentially, I'm looking at that, and I'm saying to myself, there are at least two sevens in that group, two open sides. And one could argue that Benja's not really, in my mind, I don't know that he's a weak side flanker. He's more of a seven or a number eight. Like, you know, kind of goes back to question, do we need to have a little bit more specialization like we do in the front row? And Chango knows that. Like we do in the front row, a little bit more specialization in that 6-7-8 combo. You know, going back to that 2003 World Cup winning, I mean, hearkening back to that idea of a Richard Hill, a Neil Back and Lawrence Delalio, those guys were true 6-7-8s. Do we need to do that, or is it back row interchangeable in your mind?
For me, to answer that question, and again, I'm not the best to talk about specific players, but for me, the United States Eagles needs to play the best 15 rugby players that we have on offer on any one occasion. 23, you know, I don't care if you're playing with two sixes and an eight, two eights and a seven. I mean, two eights, it just doesn't matter. It really doesn't matter in that regard, just the way the game is played today. I just want the highest quality player on the field at any one time. That's where I would go with that question.
Okay. What did you think overall in this England game?
I got some pretty strong comments from the entire weekend. Five days of U.S. rugby stuff was absolutely marvelous. I'd first like to say that this England team, like, people are like, this was England's C team. Idiots online saying that. This was not England's C team. The English Premiership is structured such that the level of play is so incredibly, it has such incredible parity that, you know, England can go 5, 6, 7 players deep and pick players that could handle themselves in the test arena. So this team that we played had four players that could have potentially been on the British and Irish lines: Ben Curry, George Ford, Freddie Stewart, and there was one.
Don Brandt.
Don Brandt, possibly, you know, and the fact that they had six new caps is actually, you know, if they have 30 plus players on this tour, they played their top team twice against Argentina, and they probably let the other guys play in this game. But again, the drop, there's no drop off. I mean, we're playing England. Don't consider this touring side any less than, with minor exception, right? But as a team, we're playing England, and there's no question there. So that's my positive about the game. We didn't play England's C team. We played against England. We played against a damn good team. The fact is, on this particular occasion, and it was difficult to sit in the stands, I will tell you that I spent a significant fraction of the game inside undercover watching it with air conditioning, because it was it was brutal just to sit there and watch the game. To have to play in that is nothing short of ridiculous, and really, at the end of the day, lends no significance to the quality of the play. I mean, we could talk about the game and, you know, the 47 knock-ons that happened. I mean, it was arguably, you know, and considering the weather, but it was arguably the worst rugby game played by two teams I've seen in decades. I can't remember one played as poorly. And quite frankly, England, for their standard, played more poorly than the United States. Had England played to their standard, that would have been an ugly game, a really ugly game. But again, I was really disappointed in the ability to be clinical at the appropriate time. And let's face it, when we're talking about the United States and our reputation around the world, which is something that I care very deeply about, and I'm sure you guys do too, having represented the country, it's the rest of the world really doesn't look at the USA versus Belgium or the USA versus Spain, but they're going to take note of the USA versus England just because it's England. You know, did England struggle against the US? Did England beat the crap out of the US? You know, and it's an opportunity for us. It is the opportunity of the year for us to be on the world stage playing against a team like this. And one, to have it in that venue with the weather, you know, that you can predict, it was tough. So I don't think there's much we can draw from the game. I certainly would never criticize the effort or the work rate or the commitment of the players. It was just a very poorly played game by both teams. There's just no way of sugarcoating that. There were two lightning delays, and it got long, and it was tough for the average person that didn't have access to the club level to just sit out there for five hours in that sweltering heat and humidity. So again, you can't really judge what happened, but halfway through the men's game, I'd say 2/3 of the crowd had left. I don't know if that would have been the case had they not had the lightning breaks.
The delays, yeah.
But I could understand if people would leave based on the quality of play.
All right, so let's round this out, and I'll start with Chango. We haven't heard from you in a while. Overall, taking these three test matches, what are your takeaways? Give me something good. Give me something bad. Give me something ugly.
All right, yeah. to take from a good note, you know, you're building combinations, and I think bottom line, like you gotta have those time together, and like whether you want to like call these tests actual tests, that's what they were, and giving these guys the opportunity to like show and you know perform and show why they're brought in is a good reason to continue to build on this USA legacy and continue to build for you know 2027. As far as like maybe I'm not so positive. Yeah, like we came out 1-2, period. Losing is not what you want to do. And that it's just going to require us to do a whole lot more homework, a lot more studying. And like Tony said, to begin with, like it's continuing to raise the standard. You have to raise the standard and you have to keep pushing, you know, that next level to get to that higher frequency, period. So I think, yeah, there's a lot to learn and there's a lot to reflect on. And, you know, the boys have a few weeks to recover now before they head off into the next couple months. And it's you have to learn fast. That's just how international footy goes. And when you're playing at such a high level, you need to continue to raise the level, period. But yeah, that'd be my take.
And that's a great takeaway, Chance, because the reality is, in the broader scheme of things, going 1-2, while a little bit disappointing, I'd rather do that now than in a month from now. Right. When it matters, when we're, you know, competing to qualify for 2027, learn our lessons, take our licks now and go, okay, let's go back when we have time to get in camp a little longer time together to develop the continuity, to erase some of those mistakes, to eliminate those, to work on some of our tactics, to work our continuity and defense and get those things together so that we're prepared for that Canadian match, which that one in my mind is a must win for the United States. It's a must win.
Oh, God.
So
that would be an understatement.
Yeah. So Will, same question to you. Overall, three test series, takeaways, good, anything good, bad, ugly?
Yeah, definitely loads of good. I'd say the biggest positive for me would have been the new caps. I think, I talked about Tonga earlier. I talked about Chris Hülsenbeck earlier. I think Ezekiel Lindemuth would look very comfortable against England. I think Marno Redlinghaus was very good across the three games. Rufus McLean was also very good, I thought, against England. He gives us something a little bit different, a bit of experience in that back three. So I think, you know, again, kind of leading on from what you just said there, Rob, like blooding those new caps now so that when it comes to PNC and qualification time, they've got some continuity and some experience there, albeit one or two games, but it's better than nothing. I think the bad, if I was to take the bad, would be just the confidence leading into this next game. I think, you know, you'd like to be on that upward trajectory. And I know we're probably going to go on to talk to it as the last question about Canada, but if we don't, you look at what Canada have done and they've come away from this 0-2, their same series. But you watch that performance they put in against Spain and they should have won that game without a doubt. Their yeah. confidence going into the next test match that they play against us. If you ask Steve Meehan and their coaching staff now, are they more confident than they were 3 weeks ago that they can beat England in Calgary? I mean, if they're not saying yes, then they're crazy, yeah. right? So my big concern would just be the confidence with the guys, but I have full faith in Scott and the group that they'll, you know, not back to the drawing board, but they'll get the boys there and ABC always beat Canada, right? And that's ultimately that's all that matters now. And then to the final bit would be the ugly you said. I think the ugly, and I don't know, and I'm not privy to the information, and I wouldn't share if I was, and this is just what we've witnessed, but the ugly would be just some of the injuries. Like, it kind of has gone under the radar a little bit, but we lost Sam Goller in that first game. Don't know how serious that was. You know, we've had Marno came off against England. KP didn't feature against England. I'm trying to think. I think there was a couple others. Like, those are some big...
AJ, upper body injury.
Of course, Adj, right? So, like, you know, ridiculous to forget that, but, like, that's a big one. So, there are four players there that in the spine of our team. You've got potentially our number one hooker in KP. You've got our number one lock, without a doubt, in Sam. And you've got AJ and now Marno, who's played himself into that lock role. So, fingers crossed they're all healthy and fit, because we're going to need them fighting against Canada, especially away from home. So hopefully they all get healthy, and I'm sure the medical staff are working overtime to make sure they are. So big shout out to all the backroom staff at the Eagles that do all the dirty work that no one ever sees. So and across Sam, all the organizations.
Yeah, and Sam's there, isn't she?
So Sam Mallett's with the USA women. So one of our yep. 18 for the Hounds is
that's
called
right, that's
the
right.
World Cup squad with the women, which is we're all super proud of Samantha.
Very that's cool.
Yeah. Very cool, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So all right, Tony. It's your opportunity now. I you were there, you witnessed it, you talked a little bit about that. You'd have some pretty strong thoughts overall, good, bad, and ugly on the series.
Yeah. You know, the good. Heck, we're playing rugby again. The team's together. We have they have an opportunity to do a critique after, you know, 1-2 with which I have, you know, just in the run of play. If you graded the run of play, I think you'd have to say that we did not meet expectations and we did not meet the standard that's going to be required to compete at the world level. If we sugarcoat it a little bit too much, you know, shame on us. So the good is, you know, again, we've got people playing. We did beat a team. You know, that beating a team, you always got to respect every opponent you play. At least we won one, right? There have been years where we haven't, so that's okay, and that's about as positive as I can be there. You know, the bad. Just having that standard, that expectation, just as a rugby playing community, just everyone raising the standard, you know, and not accepting substandard performance, not necessarily winning and losing, but substandard performance against our expectations. So I think that's the bad. And the ugly is, quite frankly, if I may talk about the 5-day, you know, Hall of Fame weekend and 50-year gala and UK embassy and the women's fundraiser on Sunday and the two games on Saturday. Was an absolutely wonderful weekend and an opportunity to showcase rugby to people in this country. And the women did that. The women not only beat Fiji, that's kind of irrelevant, but over the course of the entire weekend, it was very clear, you know, the women heading off to the World Cup, the energy they brought to the venues, the energy they brought to the dinners, the energy they brought to the field, the way they kept, they played in the same conditions as the men. They managed to have a significant amount more of continuity. The physicality of the women's game was just as high as the men's game. The ability to offload, keep the ball in play, was just as evident as the men's game. The ability to kick the ball and kick tactically, while not being able to boom the ball down 80 yards like maybe some of the men can, you know, the ability to play tactically and to reproduce the ball and play as a team. The women were phenomenal. And quite frankly, you know, as a comparison on the day, one of the second time that I've been informed that men and women have played a full international test on the same field on the same day. Apparently the last time was 1987. The comparison, you know, to be able I would much rather watch that women's game again, quite frankly. And it sort of goes into the whole conversation of the weekend at a higher level about, you know, funding and money and support and players getting paid and things like that, equality. I'm just a big believer in women's rugby. I really hope we put up a heck of a performance against England, you know, getting us on the world stage. The Ilona Maher factor on the weekend was absolutely incredible. You just kind of have to be there to see it. I mean, there were just kids. There must have been 500 kids there just to see Ilona Maher with their moms. I mean, it was just awesome. And you just can't get away from that. We need to be able to take advantage of that as a rugby playing community, men and women together. I certainly hope, you know, again, there are going to be a lot of eyeballs on the Women's World Cup, and we are playing in the marquee game, that opening game against England, 45,000 spectators, August 22nd. It's going to be absolutely phenomenal. So as we grind out here, the men's team, I would have liked to have seen the men's team a little more socially. It was clear, you know, the women had energy. They engaged with the crowds. They engaged with potential donors. And this weekend off the field was all about money, fundraising. And at the 50-year gala, $1.5 million was raised for the USA Rugby men's, you know, national teams, which is just absolutely incredible. $270 million have been now committed by World Rugby to be paid by November for various use in this country to develop the game. So a lot of great things happened at a very senior level on the weekend. I just would have loved for our men to be able to showcase. And it's just really unfortunate that I don't think we can underestimate the effect of the horrible conditions. And if I sound a little bit negative, I apologize, because those conditions were horrible. But that's my thoughts on the weekend. Fantastic weekend. And I love, you know, I just love the commitment of the people, you know, in this country. Everyone gives a shit, you know, and it's awesome.
Yeah. You know, it's funny. I will take one thing away, and I'm going to build off of something Tony said, and it's that, yeah, he said finally we're getting matches, and I think it can't be underset enough that under Scott Lawrence, the one thing that we can say is we finally have a schedule of matches in which we can truly begin to build a successful program of rugby, yep. Right? That was always the most difficult thing, is we weren't getting matches. And Chance will tell you that if you don't scrum at a consistently high level, then you're not able to perform in those matches against England. You need test footy
in order to test yourself. 10, 12 games a year. Absolutely. We need the July test, the November test, and then whatever you have in between, right. What we call the PNC, 10, 12 games. I mean, that 12 games would be awesome. That's one every 4 weeks. You know, that'd
right.
be incredible.
And when you think about New Zealand, sometimes they play as many as 14 games a year. Is that too many on top of their domestic schedule? Maybe, but yeah, I think Tony, you're right. 10 matches in order to blood our guys and give them enough test rugby in order to be competitive. Will, I noticed it sounds like you wanted to capitalize on that.
I 100% agree. And like, you know, I was very fortunate to play in an era where we had that consistently. We had the America's Rugby Championship. Yep. And it was, it's the same number of games that we have now, but it was structured slightly differently. And it's better now because it doesn't overlap with Major League Rugby, the primary source of professional rugby for most of these guys. But it took a while between, 2015 World Cup and that end of that sort of era to then get to our world ranking at 12 in 2018, where we had 2016, 2017, 2018 of ARC. Mm-hmm. June tests, November tests, 10, 11 games. Guys like, you know, you're getting 30 to 40 caps in 3 or 4 years. After the ARC was, removed, and it doesn't take a rocket science to work out that coincided with our failed attempt at qualifying for the last World Cup. We were struggling for matches. So, we've had year one of the PNC, this is year two, and we're going to qualify for the World Cup. There's no worries about that. Full faith, we'll get it done. Yeah. Next year, we've got year three of PNC, and then we've got a World Cup. Like, let's not judge too early, too quickly on where we are right now. Let's judge in 2-3 years time when Scott and the group have had 40 matches consistently. Yep. This group of players has 40 games under their belt, and then we'll see where we're at, because I hope we're top 10 in the world. I hope Moonshot for 2031 is a roaring success. And we have this process and we have the structure in place now that potentially we didn't have for the 2023 World Cup. Yeah, to qualify for the 23 World Cup.
Chance, I'm going to give you the last word, so to speak. I got to ask you this. Spain just edged out at the waning minutes. They edged out Canada by one. Come, I think it's August 22nd. Can we beat Canada?
Oh, absolutely. It's a bloodbath every time, man. It's the North America, battle. I'm stoked to watch it. I can't wait for it to happen. There's not much more to add, man. I'm just frothing at the bit for this match. So I know the boys will do it, and I mean, it's going to be a great time when it does.
All right. Sounds good. Awesome. Great stuff. We run a little longer than usual, but I think it was some great analysis. Obviously, experts, not only positionally in the areas in which they play, but also in their expertise in where they come from in the game. So we appreciate that. Folks, we're going to have some great content coming from the Rugby Rant coming up. We're going to break down the Lions test tour, do a combo with my guy from the Bonus Point podcast, TJ Olson. We're joining forces, and Will knows very well one of the individuals that will be joining us for sure, and that's none other than Todd Dammers, assistant coach for the Chicago Hounds. He's in Australia. He's gotten to see some of those matches, so we can't wait to hear from him, and hopefully maybe Michael will be able to join us again. He had some conflict with tonight, but maybe he can join us and give us a little analysis and insight as well. Michael Baska from the Chicago Hounds. But this has been awesome. Gentlemen, I sincerely appreciate you guys and your willingness to join the show. I love the thoughts. I love the insight. You guys really brought it tonight. It's been a whole lot of fun. Thank you so much. And I wish you guys a great off season as we start to have our sights set on 2026 in the MLR, which I know you guys are all excited for.
Thanks, Rob. Thanks for doing what you do, man. We need more media, more media, get more media.
Thank you. And
appreciate you, my guy.
Yep. Thank you. And perhaps if we had more, I could have gotten the word out and we could have got those vuvuzelas outside the Team England's, hotel, just to let them know what we thought about them wearing white and us having to wear navy at our home match. But we'll work on it, something to build upon. At any rate, folks, keep coming back to the Rugby Rant. We're going to continue to bring great content again as we head into the PNC, as we head into the Women's World Cup, as we head into those fall tests. We're going to keep coming at you with content, but we appreciate everybody's support because it's all about building rugby one fan at a time, and we aim to do that here at the Rugby Rant. That being said, we'll see everybody at the next.
Life is a workout, and Smoothie King is here to help you power through. Whether you're grinding out bicep curls, or muscling the couch across the living room, crushing morning miles, or sprinting through back-to-back meetings, Smoothie King has fuel to help you maximize your workouts, own your recovery, and elevate your game. Give your body the energy, protein, and power it needs with a lineup of delicious smoothies made to help you conquer your goals. Only at Smoothie King.